Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 100-year-old Bill DeGeneres of Rio Rancho, New Mexico, a Navy corpsman who served with the Marines in the Pacific. But we aren't quite there yet in his storyline. We're about to hear his memories of December 7th, 1941. But in just thinking about that topic, I want to make sure I take a moment here to honor Lou Conter, who passed away this last week at the age of 102. Lou was the last living survivor of the sinking of the USS Arizona at Pearl Harbor. He carried that mantle so well, always honoring and remembering his 1,177 shipmates who were killed on that day of infamy. And with Lou's passing, it is certainly the end of an era. In a few years, we won't have any Pearl Harbor survivors still with us. With Lou's passing, there is no one left who was aboard the Arizona on December 7th, 1941. Our prayers are with Lou Conter's family, as well as the countless people he impacted in decades as an ambassador for his fellow survivors. We're going to jump back into Bill DeGeneres' World War II story and get his memories of that fateful day. When we left off, Bill, you had gone to San Diego Naval Hospital for training to become a Navy corpsman. So is that where you were on December 7th, 1941?
Well, I was at the Naval Training Station then, because after the Naval Hospital, I was transferred to the training station in San Diego there. And I worked in the ward. I did a lot of ward duty. And I did a lot of inoculation duty of new recruits who'd come in, give them their shots, you know, just stand up and get one arm and do two there, the other arm do a couple of that. But I did that for quite a while. In fact, between that and ward duty was my whole career at the Naval Training Station there after the hospital. And while I was at the Naval Training Station, I also saw there was an ability to go to dental school at the Naval Training Station. So I opted for that, and I stayed with that. I think it was about 6 weeks, and they transferred me to the dental clinic at the hospital there. And I was working with that until I got my orders from the Marine Corps. Baby, you're going to be a Marine now. So that was when I was transferred to Camp Elliott.
I'm just curious. I mean, your memory of the earthquake was so clear. December 7th was a geopolitical earthquake that we're still feeling the effects of. Yeah, do you have a memory of that day and how the news came to you?
Oh, yes, yes. I had been home on leave from the on Liberty, so to speak, Saturday, and like we did every time I come to LA, when I went partying with friends and dancing and having a good time. And I was, Sunday morning was December the 7th, I was fast asleep, and some friend of mine came over banging on my door, get up, and I, what do you want, you know, don't bother me, I'm tired. But he told me the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and you got to get back to your base immediately. So I knew that. So I jumped on that, and I guess I had breakfast and everything, and I left. And what I usually did on the weekend to go back to San Diego, I stick my thumb out there on the 101 highway to San Diego, and there was hundreds of guys along the road there looking for roads, a ride. But I found a ride and got into the at the Naval Hospital at the time, and it was in an upheaval. And quickly they assembled everybody out on the drill field. Uh-huh. And the captain gave us a big speech about. He was really excited. I can remember that. And some of the guys around me were really excited. A couple were crying. Oh. And so the speech that the captain gave us was, we don't know what's happening now. So in so many words, there may be enemy out offshore. So we have to militarize the whole base. We were all given a rifle if we needed, and I was assigned to a barracks like other people We stayed with the people there, and I carried my medical equipment for bandaging and stuff like that. So that was for 2 or 3 days till they quieted down, found out the Japanese weren't coming in yet, but they still had a problem out in Pearl. I stayed there until I was drafted back into the Marine Corps.
And that was at the hospital or the training center?
That was at the training center, yeah.
I'm really glad you shared that, because so often we talk about the things that happened. We don't realize what almost happened. And I've heard so many stories from people in Southern California at that time that there was a real palpable fear that the Japanese were coming to California.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, we didn't know. Nobody knew. I mean, there was no traffic between the States and Pearl except for wireless, I guess. Mm-hmm. So that was the only information they had. And of course, they didn't know in Pearl what the Japanese were going to do. They had just had to sit and wait and try to pick up what they got to protect the island, you know. And of course, all the National Guard and what army that was in the States patrolled all the coast, and immediately they turned out all the lights at nighttime. And anybody could be arrested for driving a car with the lights on, you know. So it was kind of exciting.
Yeah, and you said when they took you all out there on the parade grounds and lined you up and gave you that speech, you said some of your fellow sailors were excited, some of them were crying.
Absolutely.
What about you? How did you feel about this big news and this big change in the world and your world?
Like any other body, I was pretty nervous about it, you know, what's going to happen, you know. I just accepted the way things were, and I didn't get too excited about it, but you know, I was nervous. What's going to happen now? And it was a feeling that happened right at the time when right after the Pearl Harbor, and everybody's all excited, you know. But we calmed down a while and went on routine when they found out no invasion was coming. So we just consolidated what we were doing right then, went back to work, that's all.
And just one thought comes to mind, and you may not know because you're not her, but have you ever thought about what it was like for your mother through the war? Because here for basically the whole war, she's got one son flying bombers and then fighters in Europe, and then you're out in the Pacific with the Marines at several battles where a lot of guys were killed. How do you think she handled all of that?
Gee, I think she did pretty well. She was affiliated with the Eastern Star, which is part of the Masonic, which my dad was a 32nd degree Mason. And, of course, at that time, he was home working at the studios. And she got along pretty well, I think. We wrote quite often, and I could still come to Los Angeles after Pearl Harbor, before I was transferred to the Marines. And she took everything pretty well. And Dad, you know, he'd been through wartime before, and he was gung-ho. He wanted to go back in, I know. So he was quite a character, really a nice guy, and a very, very smart person. And, of course, he went back in the Navy in 43, I think it was. Mm-hmm. All that time, my mother did very, very well. She's still working she never worked, but you know, she was with the Eastern Star and ladies' clubs, and she did well. And we all, my brother and I and Dad, all contributed to her welfare, even all during the war. So she did very well, really.
Yeah, both sons and her husband off at war, and I've interviewed, you know, over 1,000 World War II guys like you. I think I can count on one hand the number who actually got to see their dad somewhere in uniform during the war, and we're going to hear that story from you. But tell me about, you know, the year or two right after Pearl Harbor. You get sent to be a corpsman with the Marine Corps. I haven't met a Marine yet who wouldn't lay down his life for a corpsman because he knows how many times he was saved. Tell me what happened next and how you got used to that new assignment.
Well, of course, I was a Marine, a Navy with the Marines, and I wore a Marine uniform with the arm insignia. I became a third class and then a second class, and later I got a first class petty officer while I was with the Marines. Being with the Marines, at first we went to, from San Diego Naval hospital or naval, the recruit depot, that is. We went into Camp Elliott, which was north of San Diego, which was a Marine base at the time in 1941 and 42. And at that time, they had taken over 144,000 acres in Oceanside, and they developed Camp Pendleton there at Oceanside. So we didn't stay long at Camp Elliott. They told us they were opening up Camp Pendleton, and we had to get up there, and the way we were going to get up there was walk. So that's the Marines, you know. Uh-huh. So we all loaded up. It was a whole 3rd Marine Division at the time was forming. And so we hiked. It took us, I think, 3 days to go up to Camp Pendleton and open the new barracks there and open everything and move in. And that was when we started training for overseas duty then. I went with the 3rd Special Weapons Battalion Fleet Marine Force. And we had a 75-millimeter cannon mounted on a half track. We had two or three mounted 20-millimeter cannon that was partially shielded, and we had lots of 30 caliber and 50 caliber and other things that we like training for hand grenade and that kind of. That was all at Camp Pendleton. That's what I did while I was there, and a lot of hiking. Oh my God. In fact, the first day we went from Camp Elliott and landed. No, the first day into Camp Elliott from San Diego, I got with the Marines, and they said, suit up, you're going to go for a hike. And here I was in my Navy uniform, and there's about 20 of us, and the Marines in their uniforms, and I'm trailing along for a 20-mile hike. I remember that. I remember that all, and I was pretty tired by that. So.
I imagine so.
That was the beginning of my experience with the Marines, which was not bad. They're a bunch of good guys. I like them, you know.
Well, I think Admiral Nimitz had a pretty famous quote about that, about the Marines in the Pacific, and uncommon valor was a common virtue. Your first deployment, your first trip overseas, from San Diego to where?
New Zealand. We went into Auckland, New Zealand. We landed there. That was in 42, I guess. We were going to not be stationed in Auckland. We gathered our outfit and a couple others, and they put us aboard a train. And the trains are a little bit different down there at that time. They were narrow gauge, smaller trains, but they were good. They were okay. So they took us 29 miles south of Auckland. I guess it's south, but it's down the island, and to a little town called Pukekohe. I remember that very, very vividly. And they, incidentally, New Zealand is a country of a lot of horse race tracks. So they put us on a horse race track, and they had already built a little cabins, a little two-man cabins all over the infield around there. And that's where I lived, in a two-man shack. They were okay. And the main part, the officers and the mess hall and offices were in a bigger building that they stayed in in the same area. We stayed there, and then we stayed there for a while before we moved on out of there down into the Solomons.
Were there moments along the way, maybe one, maybe more than one, that really got your attention, that felt like a welcome to the war, this isn't a game kind of moment for you?
No, not really. We had a good time in New Zealand. Those were wonderful people. They invited us out to tea. In fact, the first experience with that, they invited me and another guy. They'd come out to camp, and you know, we'd show them all of our weapons and everything, and got to know them. And this one gentleman and his wife invited us out for tea to his house. My buddy and I, well, okay, tea is going to be tea and crumpets or something. So we went into town and got a steak and Ike's dinner, which was great, you know. Went out to their house, and we had another steak and egg dinner. So, that was a lot of fun, though, but we ate it. And, in fact, we took them a carton of cigarettes, and they had a hard time getting cigarettes at the time. And I took them a carton of our cigarettes, which I could buy for cost. I mean, it was like 15 cents a pack at the time. And they were delighted. So that was my experience with the people. And we got to know them, and they were always nice people and very congenial. And then weekends, we'd take the train, go back up to Auckland, and go walk the streets and meet girls. And they had a couple of dance halls where they tried to play American music. You know, it was altogether different, but a lot of fun. Yeah. And so I really didn't have any bad experiences in New Zealand at all. In fact, while we were there, we had a really nice captain of my company that I was with, and he took us on a motor trade down through several places in New Zealand. It was Rotorua, Tarango, and Pairo, which were several cities. And one of the cities has it's volcanic fumaroles or whatever they call them. The stuff that was really interesting to see. So that was part of my experience in New Zealand. Nothing bad, really, really good. Good eats, everything. You know, met a lot of friends.
Got to practice your Kiwi accent a little bit?
A little bit, and the hardest part is learning the monetary. I still can't remember all of it, but the best way to learn how to what their equivalent money is worth is get into a poker game, you know. And when you lose, you find out how much you lost.
Some things you just have to learn the hard way. But it's one thing to lose a little money in a poker game. It's another thing altogether to lose a friend in battle. And eventually that would become part of Bill DeGeneres' experience as a Navy corpsman as well. If you'd like to explore some photos of this 100-year-old World War II veteran then and now, you can go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.